Let's operate in the dark. That's how most counselors are, Jim. All right. Good evening. My name is Mark Laredo. I'm a counselor at large from Ward 7. I chair the Land Use Committee, and this is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee. I'm going to give you a few ground rules and go over our basic procedures, and we're going to get right to work. We have a full docket tonight. I want to try to get everybody out of here no later than 10 o'clock, hopefully earlier. So we'll start off by noting that our proceedings are audio taped. I'm going to introduce my colleagues and staff, and then we're going to get right to work. To my immediate left is Councilor Jim Cote, Councilor at Large from Ward 3. Behind him is Councilor Jay Harney, Ward Councilor from Ward 4. To my immediate right is Councilor Jake Ossenkloss, Councilor at Large from Ward 2. And joining us is Councilor Deb Crosley, Councilor at Large from Ward 5. Councilor Greg Schwartz is Vice Chair of the Committee, is coming in as well. He's Councilor at Large from Ward 6. We have several staff members with us this evening. Rita Young from the Legal Department. Michael from Planning. Alexander Anand from Planning, and our committee clerk, Nadia Khan. So we're going to, the way we proceed in here is we're going to take petitions in order. The petitioner is going to have an opportunity to speak. I ask the petitioners to keep their remarks to no more than 15 minutes, and I'm going to urge you, if you have a relatively simple, straightforward petition, shorter is usually better. We do our homework on this committee. My colleagues and I have read all the materials. We get lots of plans. We go through them carefully. And we'll have questions, so if we need to be educated, we'll certainly ask. But particularly if your petition is more straightforward, feel free just to get up, briefly explain why you're here, and then we'll go from there. I will have public hearings on every petition this evening, and when I do, very simple rules. You come to the podium, you state your name and address, and I give you 3 minutes or less to provide your remarks. And the reason for that time limit is, we have lots of petitions, and if we let people go on for 10, 15, 20 minutes, particularly in somewhat more controversial petitions, not only are we here all night, which is not good for us, but it's not fair to the other folks who are here for who either want to speak or for other petitions. So with that, I'm going to take one matter out of order first. It's a withdrawal. This is 95-16. Special permit petition for 37 Westbourne Road. Good evening, Attorney Lee.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, members of the Land Use Committee. My name is Lawrence Lee with the law firm of Rosemary Freeman and Lee. We're here requesting the withdrawal of the petition. We're actually refiling it for May, really just due to a technicality. We wanted to correct that and make sure we have a nice, clean petition for next month.
Okay. So you'll be back here in May on this one, hopefully?
Correct.
Great. All right. There's a request to withdraw. Councilor Crosley's moved approval. All in favor of approval. 6-0. That's withdrawn without prejudice. Thank you very much. Next is 93-16. There's a special permit petition for 413 Hammond Street. Diana Bailey, Elizabeth Battinelli. This is a request to increase the floor area ratio from 0.47 to 0.50. Is there somebody here on that petition? Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Diana Bailey. I'm the architect for this project, and Elizabeth Battinelli is my client and the owner of the house at 413 Hammond Street.
Great. You want to just briefly tell us about the... Short is good, but give us just a couple minutes.
This is an 1896 house, which we are going to restore. It's been empty and on Hammond Street for some time. In the planning process with my client, we found that we wanted to add a small addition on the back in order to give slightly more space on the ground floor for a larger than Victorian kitchen. And also better access to the basement. The house is on a fairly steep slope, so we automatically get access to the basement from the ground plane, but we wanted to make that work better. We also, there's a small deck that gets you from the first floor down to the grade level in the rear. So our total that we're adding, I think it's 417 square feet in addition to the space that is there now. There's also a side porch, which is currently a screen porch, which we want to make into a library. So we actually have to rebuild it because it's in such bad shape. But the envelope would remain the same, but the fenestration would change, and it would become interior space. One of the reasons we have a very high FAR to start with is there's also a carriage house on the site that we won't be renovating until we've got the house habitable. At that point, we'll start work on other aspects of the site. The grade question, actually, the grade plan you have from Everett Brooks, the reason the height goes up is because as we go into the lower part of the site with slightly more square feet, the grade automatic grade average goes up. I think actually that's going to be obliterated by the fact that we have to regrade the front a little bit because the current grading takes all the water straight into the house, so we have to regrade that front. We'll also be improving the driveway. The current driveway, but in the same location.
And you have approval from the Chestnut Hill Historic Commission.
Right. Everything that we are proposing has been approved by Chestnut Hill Historic Association.
Great. Wonderful. Don't go anywhere.
Okay.
Who's presenting this from planning? Go ahead, Ms. Anand.
This application is pretty straightforward. The petitioner is seeking relief to increase the non-conforming FAR and then to further increase the average height of the house, as she described, although the height is actually not changing at all. The relief to be considered is, this one laid down, thank you, whether the proposed increase in FAR is consistent with and not in derogation of the size, scale, and design of other structures in the neighborhood, and that the proposed increase in height is not substantially more detrimental than the existing non-conforming structure is to the neighborhood.
Okay.
So here's just an area context photo. The house is near some very other large houses in the neighborhood, so it will remain in scale. The addition is to the rear and will be minimally visible by the street, and again, it's been approved by the Historic District Commission.
Great. Is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard on this petition? All right. Seeing none, are there any questions or comments by my colleagues? Councilor Schwartz?
I just wanted to follow up on the last thing I think you said about the grade, because that does affect the height, the average grade, right?
Right.
Did I understand it that you were saying that in the front, you plan to make some grade changes as well that aren't reflected yet in the drawing?
What you see on the plan from Everett Brooks is the existing grade as it is now.
Yeah.
And as you move the addition into the lowlands, the average grade goes down.
I understand that.
So that's why the height's going up. But if you look at the front elevation, right now, right now, there's just a problem in that the grade is sloping to the front door instead of away from the stone foundation. So the change would be like a 6-inch fill just to get the grade away from the foundation.
Okay.
So we're not substantially changing the form of the site, no.
And that 6 inches, obviously there's a larger edge that's going around. Does that change the average grade
down the
significantly?
Down the side, really nothing changes in the side.
I see.
That's pretty much as is. The grade immediately adjacent to the house is going to come up a little bit because it's sunk everywhere. So at the moment, because the house has not been taken care of, the gutters have all just been draining straight down into the dirt. So all around the house is kind of sunk. So we just have to get that back probably to the grade it used to be.
I see. So that won't be enough to make the increase in the average height closer to where it is right now.
It probably will, yes. It'll probably negate that hole. We probably won't, in fact, be adding to the height. of the house.
Well, that's what I thought you had said, and then I just thought that you were saying that it was minimal, so it wasn't going to be enough. So that's what I was trying to clarify. Are you saying that it is enough or it's not enough to mitigate the...
Our apparent height, average height of the house off the grade plane is actually going to be less, I think, by the time we're done, than it is now.
Okay.
So I think it's 33.3 now, and it was going up to 37.4.
It's 37.4 increasing to 37.7, so it's...
Like medical problem is 37.4.
Okay.
So we thought it would be safer to ask for the relief if it does change,
if we need it.
Yes. But it's also, isn't it, Alexander, isn't it the grade all the way out 6 feet from the house?
That's how the average grade will be calculated, yeah. So this would, if they do some regrading and it ends up increasing, this would account for it.
Okay.
They wouldn't have to come back.
Great.
All set?
Yeah, I think that clarifies it.
Councillor Crosley?
Since this is in your ward, I'd be happy to move approval.
I like that. But hold on a second. We've been joined by Councilor Rick Lipoff, Councilor at Large from Ward 8. I need to entertain, is there any other comments from any member of the committee? I need to close the public hearing. You want to move to close the public hearing? Motion by Councilor Crosley to close the public hearing. All in favor? 7 in favor, none opposed. A motion to approve? Motion approved by Councilor Crosley. Do you have a draft board order for us?
The draft board order was attached to the memo.
Yep.
And there really haven't been any changes, so I have 4 proposed findings, that the site is an appropriate location for the addition, that the increase in FAR is consistent with and not in derogation of the neighborhood, that the height, is not substantially more detrimental to the neighborhood. And then I finally note that the plans have been reviewed by the Historic District.
Any comments on the findings, folks? All right, seeing none, let's go to the conditions, please. Is there anything unusual or special?
No, it's the standard conditions for a special permit.
Okay, questions or comments on the board order? Seeing none, there's a motion by Councillor Crosley, all in favor of approval. 7 in favor, none opposed. This will go to the full board at our next meeting, which is Tuesday night. It will get voted on at that time, and hopefully you'll be all set.
Great.
Best of luck. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Next is 94-16, special permit for 2171 Commonwealth Avenue. This is Philip Haresco, Theodoros Venturis. This is a request to approve a two-story garage in Ward 4. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, Chairman and Councilors. It's a small addition on the rear.
Could you give me your name and address, please?
My name is Philip Fresco. I'm an architect and a landscape architect. My clients are here. Mr. and Mrs. Ventrus are here with me this evening. The proposal here is to add a carriage-like garage onto the rear of an existing property, and it's set back quite a distance from Commonwealth Avenue. We're not even close in terms of FAR or any other requirements of zoning. The issue at hand is the building of a 4-car garage with a family room and a bedroom and space above for the family in this carriage-like house that sits behind the existing house. So the reason for being here is to build a larger than allowed by zoning and the number of spaces by zoning.
All right. Thank you, sir. Planning, you want to tee it up for us, please?
It's a petition to build a 4-car garage, and one that's larger than 700 square feet. So the special permit is required under 7.3.3 is simply to allow that, what I just described. And the criteria for the board to consider is whether the site is an appropriate location for a garage that size. and continuous street cars, and whether or not the proposed garage will adversely affect the neighborhood. We also have an aerial view here with Commonwealth Avenue to the south. And as the applicant said, the house is set back quite a bit and is adjacent to parkland to the west and the adjoining neighborhood to the east. And next, here's the site plan. This would have Commonwealth Avenue to the left. You see the addition to the rear, perpendicular to the existing house, along with some proposed screening behind the addition. And just to quickly go through, this is the floor plan, showing the new addition to the right, the existing house to the left. This is the elevation. Again, it's kind of a barn-type design with some detail on the roof. And the garage doors on the ground level. And the photo of the existing house from Conair. This is view of the house from Lions Park. The addition would be, if you can go back, to the left of the existing house, screened by some trees. And this is a view from Virginia Road. And then the addition would be perpendicular to the rear of the house, which in the startup is on the right-hand side.
Is work underway on this project?
Only on the house itself, the existing house.
Not the garage?
Not on the garage.
Okay. Anything else from planning for the moment, or we can certainly come back to? Right. Why don't we do this? Let me get comments from any members of the public, and then I'll take questions. Is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard in this petition? This time, seeing none. Councillor Crosley?
So I just want, for the record, it's obvious that this is a four-car garage in addition to the two-car garage that already exists. And
that
so potentially
correct.
You're going to have a six-car garage
that
on the
correct.
Site. It does appear to me that we're going to wind up with a building that is almost as much area for cars as there is for the house itself, and I'm just going to just lay that on the table. The thing that concerns me about the project more than anything else is the proposed circular drive over the sewer easement. I think our engineering department made it very clear that they would not approve that if they were able to disprove it, and I'm very concerned. I see a lot of equipment on the site. Is that for work that's being done on the house? Because my eyes are not that crisp, but it looks like I'm looking at a backhoe. Is this equipment that you own? Okay, so my question is this equipment that you own, or is this equipment that's ready for?
Could you state your name and address, please, sir?
My name is Theodore Matsouris.
You need to speak into the microphone, please.
I live at 902 Tomahawk. The backer was there for the surveyor. He wanted to survey the wall estimate of the property. That's the only reason that the machine
is there. Making a test pit?
Yes, two
okay.
of them. I had to dig up two of them.
Okay. So I just wondered, like, you don't own this and you don't keep equipment on the site.
No, I don't. No,
okay.
I don't.
Well, my concern is, though, I just put it out there for the record. I thought the engineer's report was very clear, and I would like not to see vehicles constantly trespassing the sewer easement. Particular fondness of mine for our sewer system and the fact that we're rehabbing it across the city, and I wouldn't want to put something in place that would jeopardize that system. It's an old brick line, as I understand it. It's a square brick line. So driving over it could certainly cause some damage.
We don't need to do that. We could eliminate the circular driveway if that's and avoid driving over the easement other than the fact that driveway into the house presently drives over that.
I see that, too. It just seems excessive to me to be adding so much more pavement and so much drivable area. I'm not sure how I feel about the project. Other than that, I think I put on the table what it's a very unusual thing to do.
The question, I think, for the petitioner is, can you move the driveway so it's not
over the series, and I heard the petitioner say yes. And certainly before, I'm not planning on voting this out tonight, unless my colleagues feel otherwise. So when you come back, sir, I think the request from Councillor Crosley is that you show a different plan. Is that your request?
But to be clear, it's the addition of the circular drive because the,
no, I understand
the driveway now crosses the sewer easement, and I get that. And it's probably something we should check.
Okay.
The sewer easement. We should probably check the condition of that line as it stands, but I would not be in favor of adding a whole lot more driveway to this project, which is already now expanding a driveway and for, you know, more vehicles than is normal on a single-family lot.
Understood. It was merely an attempt to try and acknowledge that there's a front door to the existing house. And so the purpose of the drive,
the
purpose of the drive was to do that. We will achieve that through a walkway.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. All right. Questions, other colleagues? Councillor Schwartz?
I'm not sure this actually is part of the relief requested, but I was just curious, from the elevations, it looked like the height of the addition in the back is close to the ridge line of the existing structure, or is it slightly subordinate to it? And there's also a cupola of some sort on top of it.
It's a decorative. The cupola is a decorative element,
right?
And we're trying to.
So what about the ridge line? Is it
the ridge lines are similar?
So it won't be. I mean, so again, bulk is one of the things that we always were concerned about. Is it going to be visible at all, that ridge line from the front?
No. The plan is not to have it visible from the front.
Okay. Can you go back just to the, or who had the control of the slide?
Let's see what's here.
Let's go back one before that. The other way. One more. Right there, on the bottom. So that dotted line that goes to the left on the bottom diagram, is that above the ridge line?
No.
Or it's just, okay. So you decide to go to the exact same level as opposed to
trying to go with the exact same level for building.
Okay. And then can you just go to the next picture of Lyons Field there, or the view from Lyons Field, the next one with the construction equipment in it? Yeah. So as far as the topography, is there a drop off as you go towards this field, or is it at the same level? I couldn't tell from the plans. Is it where we are looking from? Is that higher than
yes,
the property?
It's the house lot sits higher than Lyons Field. Lyons Field is below.
So
I think 5 feet maybe or more.
So I think that you're already addressing this slightly significantly by taking out that circular drive, but there was a good amount more pavement in that area that would be kind of potentially a drainage issue towards the field, it would seem to me, if it's more hardtop. So I think by taking out the circular drive, I think that that's a good idea, because otherwise you would have more drainage to the back.
Understood, and that's the reason that there were drainage studies being done, you know, so we don't have to do
great
this driveway.
It was,
as I said, it was an architectural landscape feature to acknowledge the front of the building.
Right. So I guess I'd add my voice to supporting your plan to take it out. Thank you.
Councilor Lipoff and Councilor Cody, I know we've been joined by Councilor at Large from Ward 1, Scott Lennon, President of the Board. Go ahead, Councilor Lipoff.
I'm going to ask a question that's on everybody's mind that has nothing to do with our judgment here. Six-car garage. Everybody wants to know.
Okay.
Do you collect? Is it for commercial, or do you have quadruplets getting their license?
No, the second thing. I have three kids. My son goes to Newton South here. He wants to buy a little pickup truck. He has a little Audi. The existing garage, it's less than 7 feet. His truck is not going to fit in there. My truck is not going to fit in there. I have a very steep driveway next door here, 902 car miles. And it's a struggle getting up there. And my little girl, I got three kids. My little one is getting a car next year.
The only reason for this was to, you know, get more space to like park the cars, put them in a garage. Thanks.
Councilor Cody, do you want to say something?
No, that was my question.
You know, I guess I'll voice my... I have some concern, quite frankly. We certainly want to accommodate families' needs, but the idea that we're going to be creating essentially a six-car garage, it's not just for you, sir, it's for whomever occupies that house in the future. I can't think of anything we've done which is more than like a three-car garage anywhere in the city. And to me, a six-car garage, frankly, is like a commercial lot. Are these commercial vehicles? Any of them?
I'm sorry, pardon me.
Are these any of these commercial vehicles?
My pickup truck is a commercial vehicle. Okay. I also drive this truck through the winter because I cannot use my car. It's a rear-wheel drive. I can't go nowhere with it.
So you said you have a car and you have a pickup truck, a commercial vehicle.
Yes.
You have an additional child who's getting another pickup truck. That's three.
Exactly.
You have a daughter who may get a car. That's four. A number of us have multiple kids. I get how that works.
Okay.
But now we're building six bays.
No. We're actually building four.
Plus the two you have.
The two I have, they're very low. You walk up to come by and see it, they like 6 foot something.
But there's still car bays. We're going to have a six-car garage on this lot.
Yes. I have two cars on my own, and I got three kids and a wife.
Well, can planning or legal help us out a little bit here? I mean, I can't think of a single project we've approved in a residential setting that has more than maybe three-car garage. Maybe there's a four-car garage somewhere in the city I'm not aware of. This is six. Have we ever approved a five- or six-car garage anywhere?
I'm not aware of any instances which we've been asked to and have approved a garage of six bays, with two within the four additional ones. But I would point out that the reason why you have the limitation is because of the concern over spaces being large and turned into commercial activities, particularly landscape activities.
That's exactly what I'm concerned about here.
So the question always is whether there is some internal configuration you can consider for the garages that might prevent that sort of conversion in the future. But I leave that to a review of heights and whether it's free span and inside.
Can I inquire, sir, what business you operate?
I own a lot of property in Boston. I'm not a contractor. I only do my own work. I don't take jobs. I only work on my own stuff. There is no crew that I got. I work with one guy.
You're not operating any landscaping business or anything like that out of the property?
No construction company, no landscaping business. None whatsoever. I own a pizza place in Boston.
Okay. I'm just trying to understand what the use of the property is, sir. I'm not trying to at all inquire about what you do. You have the right to do whatever you want. I just want to know what the property is being used for. And you're saying it is not being used for storage of landscape vehicles or anything like that.
No.
Okay.
The attempt here was to try and take the vehicles from being outside, because there are going to be a good number of vehicles just standing outside. The other attempt was to try and make it more of a carriage house look rather than just simply having a large garage and to sort of have that appearance. The other is that he's not always in the country, and to leave the vehicles out while he's away and the family's away wasn't thought of as being, you know, a reasonable thing to do either. So it's a place to house the vehicles rather than leave them all outside.
Thank you, sir. If this was a carriage house, would this be permissible as a matter of right? No. Okay. could they build with a special permit? Okay. And will we have any restrictions on the number of bays in a garage in that case?
There's no restriction on the number of bays except for the special permit for when the garage exceeds 3 vehicles.
Okay, thank you. Councilor Auchincloss.
This question is as much for my fellow councilors as for the petitioner. How easy is it for the next owner of this house to turn that four-car garage into livable space, and is that permissible under the permit? Is this basically requiring this house hereafter is going to have six spaces, or is this a temporary use for this owner, but then in the future it could become a livable space?
The permit runs with the land. I don't know if they could take this space in the future and convert it back without a special permit or not. Is that the question?
That legally, and also just in terms of the architecture and the design of it, is that something that's feasible? Because the next owner, more than likely, is not going to want six cars in a garage. And I imagine that the next owner might want to renovate it and turn that into a livable space beneath the family room.
There's a nod.
They could turn some of the garage bays into livable space, probably without even amending the special permit, because they're bringing the lot more into conformance. I think would be something that's allowed under special permit. And thank you. This structure has been designed to meet the dimensional controls, so it conforms to all the controls now, including FAR. So whether they converted the garage space into bedrooms or something else, it would still remain conforming with the dimensional controls.
Thank you. I would propose, I share Councilor Rita's concern about six-car garage, but the fact that it would be fairly frictionless for the next owner to transform into livable space makes me more comfortable with it. I mean, it won't be just a bespoke solution for this petitioner.
Councilor Honey?
I'm trying to remember, years ago, we approved a special permit for a house over on Park Street, or I believe it was the owner of the New Balance Corporation. Big, massive house.
Sure.
And he's basically a collector of cars. And I'm trying to remember what we approved, maybe Weta remembers, for that particular special permit. Because he stores a lot of cars in there, and it's a museum almost.
That, if you remember, was an existing carriage house, and actually there was no expansion of the existing carriage house. It was a detached structure, unlike this, which will be attached to the main house. You are right that the owner was a collector of cars. There weren't any particular parking stalls, and he wasn't storing the cars, by and large, at that location. He has a storage facility over in Brighton, I recall, but he wanted to be able to have actually social events and put four or five of his favorite, at that moment, cars in the garage, in the carriage house for events. But it wasn't primarily a storage facility for those cars, and the special permit that was written was very specific as to what sorts of activities could go on. So it wasn't, they aren't really quite comparable situations, but you're right, there was that detached carriage house that we will allow a number of cars to be displayed in.
All right. Councilor Schwartz.
Mr. Chair, I mean, I think my questions were answered. I feel comfortable with this particular petitioner. I agree that there's probably some concerns about enforcement down the road if there's a transfer of ownership, but I think that the way that we generally work with those things is through complaint-driven ISD kind of enforcement. So I'm not sure that I feel comfortable, not allowing a special permit request in this case if we're hearing pretty clearly that it's not for commercial uses, since it seems to me, and I might be wrong, but the rationale behind the ordinance that limits garage sizes and number of bays is for that sole purpose, which is to reduce the uses, commercial uses. So maybe we can put that in the conditions if this is something that we ultimately vote for. that it will not be used for commercial uses and vehicles, and then it can be enforced. Because it's otherwise, you know, tucked away behind the house, and there's no FAR issues, there's no open space issues. I think the drainage issues are obviously important to address, and it sounds like they're ready to do that. Obviously, that would be a condition. So that's where I'm.
So do you want to vote? We have two options, it seems to me. We can vote it this evening, subject to changing the plans, which is one option, or we can hold it until our last meeting of the month, see what those change plans are, and certainly vote it at that time. It's really the will of the committee. I still have some serious reservations about this project, but I'm going to defer to my colleagues. Councillor Crosley.
The will of the committee, if you vote it tonight, I will abstain. I think I would like to see the revised plan, although it's pretty clear what it would be. I'm more concerned about the proportion of garage to dwelling. It's an extraordinary proportion. And I know that we can condition the permit and that you're not intending, and we would condition the permit so that you would not run a commercial enterprise out of the building, and that would be important. I'm confident that you can address the drainage issues. You will have to for the engineering department anyway. But I personally just need to think about this a little bit. It's going to be very visible from Lions Park, and it's a large garage.
The vegetation is quite heavy from Lions Park. It's hard to see Lions Park from the house lot. And I would say that the plan was to put vegetation, evergreen, broadleaf evergreen, rhododendrons, hemlock, other arborvitaes, green evergreen trees along the rear border and that side. So the intention was to make it a private feel for the back and not visible for the neighbors around there, because we felt, and planning encouraged us to do that when we would do that.
Do we have a landscape plan with your permission, sir?
Yeah, I was just going to go there because there is, but the planning department had recommended in their report to add to the landscape plan.
Yeah. It's the minimal plan that we would add to holes in the present landscape. It's quite vegetated presently, but it's more deciduous trees, and what the intention was is to add to that
evergreen
in that way.
Councilor Harney?
If I can ask the petitioner, did you meet with your neighbors on Regina Road and on Commonwealth Avenue to talk about this proposal at all?
Yes, I did, sir.
Okay.
I handed out plans. I have two abutters.
Right.
I gave them plans on both sides. I also went up the road and I knocked some other doors. Some people wasn't there. There was one empty house, which is directly in the back of them.
But the two
actually the back, to the right of the across the way.
You spoke with the immediate abutters, though.
Yes, I did. Yes.
And they know, and they were okay with your plan.
Yeah, they know all about it. Yes.
Okay.
I'm hearing from Councillor Crosley that she'd like to hold this. I would as well, Councillor Ashenclaw.
Well, I certainly respect that desire to hold. I would be ready to vote for it tonight, but I have to hold.
Councillor Lennon?
I would only echo the sentiments of Councillor Crosley. You know, if we're talking about the end of the month, we're talking 2 weeks from now, right?
Yep.
To see another set of plans, kind of understand a little bit more about what's been done throughout the city, et cetera, et cetera. So, granted, I didn't hear the presentation earlier, so I probably would have abstained anyway, so I don't know if that helps you, but if that's the case, that's where I would be.
We are on for the 26th, correct? In which case, we then we'll have a vote on the 1st of May, I think it's May 1st. So we're talking a delay of 13 days if we hold it. Councilor Harney?
I'll move hold on this item.
Yeah.
And I like, as long as we can get the plans that show the removal of the circular drive, and I don't know what other questions we have.
Sir, so if it's held, it would be very helpful for us between now and the next time if you come in with revised plans, a little more detail on your landscape plan, so we see that very clearly. I'd like to see a copy of the, if we could, the board order for the house with the multiple cars. It would be helpful to me to see what you dealt with there. Okay?
Yeah.
Yes, Councillor Schwartz?
I'm sorry, this is really more of a design question, but I was just curious, as I was flipping through back on the plans, can you just explain to me the front elevation of the addition where there looks like the garage doors are 7 panes? Is that
possible?
Two pane, and then 3 in the middle for the...
We've yet to decide on what that will be. It's supposed to be wood-type doors that look like a carriage house, some older style of wooden door, and we've yet to settle on whether how much glass is going to be in it.
Okay. Yeah, I guess my thought is just how much do you break it up and how much do you... Obviously, that would be something that you'd deal with planning about, but
I will furnish
try to minimize the deal of a garage, large parking garage.
Okay, I'll furnish that. I will bring back a detailed landscape plan, and I will show a revised driveway. If we could be accommodated at the next hearing, that would be fine.
My plan is to take you up on the 26th, is it? I have the dates right. 26th. Is that right? Sorry?
We
2 weeks from tonight.
We would furnish that to the planning department first, and then...
They get it to us. Don't worry about that.
No, I just so that I would have their input. They're very talented people and knowledgeable.
No, I think that's a great idea. There is a lot of talent in our planning department. I'm sure they'll be happy to chat with you offline and try to work with you on those things.
Right. So we would like to do that.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a motion to hold by Councillor Harney. All in favor, hold. 8 in favor, none opposed. It's held. The public hearing is still open. I did not close it. So when we come back, if there's any member of the public who is to be heard, they can speak at that time. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Next, 96-16, there's a special permit for 1573 Beacon Street, Richard Levy, RBL Architects, at 1573 Beacon Street. This is to extend the front of a garage. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Richard Levy, RBL Architects from 30 Jacobs Terrace in Newton. This is a proposal to increase the FAR on an existing non-conforming house by about 180 square feet. So it's going from, I believe, 0.47 to 0.49. The owner wants to put in a couple of storage areas in the back of the garage, necessitating bumping out the front two bays of the garage by approximately 9 feet on the right bay and approximately 8 feet on the left bay, in order to still have access for both cars because of the storage areas in the back.
So, anything else you want to add to that?
We're keeping the roof line of the bump out below the master bedroom window up above, so basically it's just essentially a single story bump out.
Before my colleagues go, I just have a kind of a concept question. Does the garage currently face the street?
No.
Or not? It did not look like to me on the plans that it did. It faces the side.
The garage is towards the rear of the property.
Right.
And faces the left hand side. There's an easement that goes out to the park behind the house.
Okay.
And the driveway abuts that.
So you share the driveway essentially with the neighboring property?
Yes.
Okay. And so from a visibility point of view, the bump out is really not something you'd see on the street. It's not like we're not creating a snout house essentially.
No, it's the bump out is projecting to the left hand side. Adjacent to the informal entrance of the house.
Okay, good. Planning, you want to take us through this?
Sure. This is a very straightforward petition to increase the FAR of a house that is already non-conforming with respect to FAR. the criteria to consider is that the house will remain consistent with and not in derogation of the size, scale, and design of other structures in the neighborhood. There are a bunch of structures to the west of this house that are also very large and comparable in FAR. Again, it will be minimally visible to the street, and it really should not impact the neighborhood.
Okay. Questions by my colleagues. Is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard on this petition? Councilor Schwartz?
Just want to be clear. It's the picture that you showed us and the picture that we have in our memos is from the side, from the left side of the house, correct? So that's the left side elevation?
Yes. Yes, I oriented the photo so that you could see the garage, but from the Beacon Street.
Do we have any picture from the Beacon Street? I'm sorry, I haven't been able to get to the photo.
The same issue.
Do not have any
drawing of the back and from the side.
Maybe I can. Is the entrance to the house face Beacon Street, or does it face the driveway?
But there are two entrances.
There are two. Yeah,
the formal entrance to the house faces Beacon Street.
Okay.
And the informal entrance that's adjacent to the right garage bay faces the side.
I think that I had some similar confusion to Councilor Schwartz in terms of the orientation. I appreciate why you did it that way. I mean, that was the right way to do it, but it wasn't clear enough to me. So, okay. Anything else planning wants to add?
Nope.
You all set, Councilor Schwartz? Yes, Councilor Crosley?
I know the property. I know the area. I'm ready to move approval if
Good.
You're ready.
Let's just make sure. Is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard? Seeing none, Councilor Crosley, we moved or closed the public hearing?
So moved.
All in favor of closing the public hearing? 8 in favor, none opposed. The public hearing is closed. Do you have a motion to approve? All right. Got a motion to approve by Councilor Crosley. Do you have a proposed findings here?
Yes. So there was a draft order attached to the memo. There are two findings with this project relating to the expanded house not being in derogation of the size, scale, and design of other structures in the neighborhood. And that the site is an appropriate location for the proposed addition.
Good. Any questions on the findings? Seeing none, conditions, anything unusual?
Completely standard.
Okay. We have a motion to approve by Councilor Crosley. All in favor of approval? 7 in favor, none opposed. Councilor Schwartz stepped out for a moment. You're all set. We will take this up next Tuesday night. No need to be here. Most likely it gets approved in first call, and you're good to go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. I've got three more petitions this evening, and with my colleague's approval, I want to take the last two up first because I think they're relatively short, and I think 27 Waverly Ave will be somewhat longer. Is there any objection to that? All right. So we're going to skip over 27 Waverly. I really think we're going to move the other two quickly. We're going to go to 98-16, special permit for 99 Oxford Road, Christina Corona and Joseph Maloney. This is to add a second-story rear addition over an existing room at 99 Oxford Road. Good evening, Attorney Morris.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Terry Morris. I'm an attorney with offices of 57 Elm Road, Newtonville, and with me here this evening are the owners of the property, Mr. Joseph Maloney and Christine Corona. This is pretty much like a lot like the petition you just heard, a petition to exceed the FAR to provide for a second-story addition over an existing family room at the back of the house. There's no increase in the footprint of the building. There's no other dimensional relief required except for floor area ratio. The addition will not be visible from the street, and the property itself backs up to the Weeks Playground, so there's no impact on the rear of the property. I think, Mr. Chairman, in the interest of time, I would entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Planning, want to weigh in on this?
Not sure that I have anything to add. It is very consistent with the last petition we heard, a petition to further extend the non-conforming FAR. And like Mr. Morris said, there is no increase to the footprint. It's a relatively minor addition over an existing kitchen.
Questions from members of the committee on this? We have some for a change of pace, we have some easier ones tonight. Is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard on this petition? All right, seeing none, do I have a motion to close the public hearing as Ward 6? Councilor Schwartz stepped out. Would you? Councilor Lipoff has moved to close the public hearing. All in favor of closing the public hearing? 7 in favor, none opposed. The public hearing is closed. Do I have a motion to approve? All right. We can delve into that later. I make these personal observations too, and I think my colleagues get tired of them. Not that we're tired of yours. So we have a motion to approve by Councilor Lipoff. Do we have a draft board order?
Yes, a board order was attached to the memo. There are three findings with this petition: that it's not in the derogation of the size, scale, and design of other structures in the neighborhood, and that will not be substantially more detrimental than the existing non-conforming structure, that it's an appropriate location for the house, and that the addition will not adversely affect the neighborhood.
Okay. Questions or comments from the board order? Conditions? Anything new?
Nothing specific, all the standards.
All right. We have a motion from Councilor Lipoff, all in favor of approval. 7 in favor, none opposed. Thank you, Mr. Morris. Just one of the easier ones. All right. We're going to then jump to 99-16, petition for 360 Ward Street, Burr, 360 Ward Street. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Thank you for inviting us here. I'm Danny Baer. I'm an architect for this project, 2001 Beacon Street in Boston. With me here is Mr. Shemesh. He's the owner of this property. This is a very challenging lot. The required size for this lot by the zoning bylaw is 10,000 square feet. The actual size of this lot is less than a third of that. As a consequence, everything in this lot is close to a property line, and the FAR is very difficult. We propose to increase the footprint of the structure slightly to construct a two-car garage to enlarge the existing one-car garage, to change the orientation of the vehicular ingress and exit from the garage, to make parking easier and snow removal in the winter easier. To accomplish that, we have to construct a retaining wall to mitigate the existing grade at the street, which is very close to the garage. And the increase in FAR nonconformity is from 0.75 to 0.79. It's already a pre-existing nonconforming, and we are increasing slightly the front yard.
And if you're facing the house from west, west Bourne, is the proposed retaining wall to the right of the driveway or the left, just so I can orient myself?
If you're facing the house, if you're in west Bourne and you're facing the house, the retaining wall is to the right, and it's riding up along the property line, and then it turns right into the house. At the highest point, this retaining wall is 6 feet. We have to handle a fairly difficult grade situation for the cars to get in, so the highest point is going to be right up against the house.
But that's fairly close to the setback just because of the configuration of the property.
It's a corner lot without a corner.
No, I know that area. Okay. Anything you want to add for the moment, sir?
I'm sorry?
Is there anything else you want to add for the moment?
Subsequent to filing for this, we have looked a little more. We removed in our plans some of what's existing as a paved area, and we replaced it with a planted area. But I think that we have not changed substantially the request.
Okay. Planning, who's got this one?
I do.
Oh, tee it up.
Okay, so, as you, well, okay, so just,
kind of echo what the petitioner, how he described the project. The question we need is special permits on the 7.3.3. They seem to extend and attach single-family dwelling with non-conforming setbacks, increase the non-conforming FAR, further increase the non-conforming open space, and build a retaining wall in excess of 4 feet in height and setback. And when reviewing this report, the council should consider these criteria. They didn't ask reducing the setback would be substantially more detrimental to the existing non-conforming use to the neighborhood, whether the increase in FAR is consistent with that integration with the size, scale, and design of other structures in the neighborhood, whether the proposed reduction of the non-conforming open space by 3% would be substantially more detrimental, and whether the proposed retaining wall will adversely affect the neighborhood.
All right. Thanks. Do you want to go through some other stuff?
Yes, so you have a few graphics. Here's the retaining wall pushing from the house to the restaurant. Here's those elevations. You see how the doors to the ground how to face the restaurant, how to face the neighbors. You can see the photos. You can see the existing garage door in white. So if we reconfigured the face outward, this shows the house in front of a difficult garage to get into. And here is the boundary line with the neighbor to the south, where there's some landscaping in place.
Thank you. Before I take questions from my colleagues, is there any member of the public who needs to be heard in this position? Come on out, please. Good evening. How are you? How are you?
My name's Eric Dittner. I live at 362 Ward Street, which is the other half of the duplex. I just want to say I fully support my neighbor's desire to have a usable two-car garage. However, I would like Newton to sign off on drainage. I'm a little concerned digging a deeper hole in the ground in already low spot may cause problems, and I'm hoping the planning board will just sign off on that.
Thank you. Anybody else on this petition? Seeing none, questions or comments from my colleagues? Councilor Crosley. Could you speak into your microphone?
Is it on now? Yeah. I have no problem with any of the particular relief that's being requested. I was wondering if the planning, it looks so difficult to me. I'm wondering if the planning department can speak to the physical ability to access the garage and get back out onto the street safely. And pursuant to your neighbor's comment, I think the area of building, the increase in impervious surface, does not require by normal protocol our engineering review. But it's a really good point that if you're digging a hole sort of downward into the garage, that you might want to install a dry well and have it sized and so forth and put a trench drain down there.
We plan to do both.
That makes that easier. Planning? Go ahead.
Yeah, and as to the accessibility, we think that by reorienting the garage doors to face the street instead of facing the side, it should be much easier for cars to get in and out and to back up or enter the street. And so now it kind of makes it a very tight right-hand turn to get in or out.
Okay. Questions from anyone else? So I want to just pick up a little bit on what Councilor Crosley said. There is going to be some room for a car exiting the garage to be in a driveway before you hit the sidewalk. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, yes.
Okay. I mean, it's a difficult intersection. I think backing out of there is going to be
is probably difficult now, and it's going to continue to be difficult.
We've looked at it. We preserve the existing curb cut. It's as far as you can get from the intersection on this lot. There's no better way to enter this lot with a vehicle.
And does the construction of the retaining wall in any way affect the ability of a driver backing out to look to his or her right or left for pedestrians on the sidewalk there?
I don't think so, because by the time the car backs up to the lot line on the sidewalk, the car has already gained enough grade, so visibility is easier. I agree with you that when the car is all the way in the garage, it's hard to see what's on the sidewalk, but it's the maneuver to get the car out is an S-curve, and by the time you get to the end of the...
Even though you're going to be now reorienting the doors so they're facing the street, it's still going to be difficult?
I'm sorry?
Even though you're reorienting the garage door?
It improves the visibility simply because you have more distance to back up.
Does Plenty have any thoughts on that? Any concerns there?
I think by the time the driveway meets the sidewalk, the retaining wall is low enough that the driver will be able to see pedestrians or drivers.
Okay.
So there should not be a conflict there.
That was my biggest concern. This is a pretty, as you know, it's a heavily traveled, for a residential area, given the synagogue is right there, it's a heavily traveled area with lots of pedestrians. Sounds actually like you're doing better than you have currently with the configuration. Okay, any questions or comments from any other colleagues? Seeing none, it's in my wards. I need somebody else to move to close the public hearing. So moved by Councilor Lipoff. All in favor of closing the public hearing? Public hearing is closed, 8-0. A motion to approve. Councilor Lipoff, do we have a draft board order?
We do. It's included in the memo, and we also have the findings here. The phase 3 garage site is an appropriate location for the proposed garage and the wall. That the wall and the addition including the garage will not adversely affect the neighborhood. Since the walls are located under an existing raised deck and shielded from the site's topography, the extension regarding the FAR, lot coverage and open space, will not be substantially more detrimental to existing non-conforming structures, considering minimally adding to those non-conformities. And again, that the extension of the design with the addition will be consistent and non-degradation with the size, scale, and design of other neighborhood structures, and that there will be no nuisance or serious hazard to vehicles or pedestrians, since the existing driveway width will remain unchanged.
Questions? Yes, Councilor Schwartz.
So I know this is a small, very small lot, so, and it's non-conforming already, and, you know, the increase is small, but the FAR looks alarmingly high. And so I'm just wondering whether we can have a very brief, or whatever, however brief we want, discussion brief about how are we approaching these small lot sizes, large FARs? I mean, I know our colleagues on the council sometimes don't have the same amount of time and thinking about this, so I think that as this comes, this one, and there was also a previous one that was small with a large FAR because of the small lot size, whether we might just briefly talk about, I would feel more comfortable bringing this to the full council if we'd at least had that conversation. I mean, I know that there's one view, right, which is the FAR is about bulk, and for the size of the lot, the scale of the house is large if it's the same size house as some of the houses next door that are on bigger lots, because you're on a smaller lot, so it's a bigger proportion of the lot, and that's what the FAR captures. But oftentimes the other view is, well, if you just look at the scale of houses, this is the same scale. So we're not talking about like FAR so much as how big is the house compared to its neighbors.
I mean, I'll offer my observation for what it's worth. This is, to me, is a de minimis increase. that actually is making the lot and the house function better than what is there currently. I mean, this is clearly an improvement. They're going to have a two-car garage, not one. They're very modest, and this is an area where there's fairly dense housing, and my guess is a not inconsiderable number of lots that are non-conforming, just given the way this area has been built up over the years. I don't think we have to do much justification here, personally, but
did planning provide us with any of the local FARs on this street? Just because, again, I think that that's important to me and our colleagues, might be. Did we just, I know we talked about that in the pre-meeting.
You know, I know we talked about it for a couple of the other projects. I'm not sure we talked about it for this one. I would echo Councilor Laredo's thoughts in that this is a very small lot with basically a townhouse-style house on the lot. And it's a very unusable garage now, and it's a real benefit to the neighborhood to get the two cars sheltered and accessed much easier than they are now.
Yeah, I mean, I may ultimately agree with you, but I think that at the same time, the argument that it's a small lot begs the question, really, in my mind, as to FAR, what does that mean? You know, if the ordinances are based on FAR, not on size of house, then, you know, we're not necessarily consistent. And the other thing I would say is, even though this makes the garage work better in some ways, it does reduce the setback even further from a non-conforming. It doesn't work perfectly, obviously, because of what we just talked about as far as backing out into the intersection. So it's obviously a difficult site to start with, and we might be improving it somewhat, but there are other principles that we're choosing to, you know, devalue in making that decision.
I guess I differ, but I know a couple of my colleagues wanted to speak. So, Councillor Lennon, did you want to say something, and then Councillor Lipoff?
I understand Councillor Schwartz's point. And didn't we last term have a similar petition? It was on a street across the street from City Hall, but we had a very small lot where we put an addition. I thought we had put some sort of language in the findings so that other colleagues understood that it was a very small lot with sort of a de minimis increase. I thought maybe it might be helpful here to put the same language so that people understand. I could see it if we were going from, you know, 0.48 to 0.79, that would be much different, but it's already, you know, over the FAR, well over the FAR with a slight increase to make the functionality of the lot work better. So I'm fine with it, but I was just curious about that language that we had put in for that. I just can't recall the street off the top of my head.
I mean, I think it was Dennis. I think G-E-N-I-S or something like that. It's right on the edge.
All right. Councilor Lipoff?
Yeah, just to follow on that, you know, when we see an FAR of 0.75, where 0.46 is the maximum, you say, oh, we haven't exceeded that by allowing some past petition to exceed it. This is a 1920s house that was that size. The new FAR comes in, and now it's non-conforming, and we're going from 0.75 to 0.79. So that's really the only thing to look at here, to say that this house is already too large when it was built as such, and now our new zoning laws, you know, make it seem like it's out of whack. It's not. So I think that's something to remember.
Councilor Crosley?
Well, for the most part, ditto. I think this is really, I understand the sentiment, and I understand wanting to explain to the rest of the council how it is we've come to a decision. But I think there's probably a better example coming our way that will serve to allow us to have this kind of discussion, because this already exists. And so the FAR rule has vexed us for years. I don't think this is an example of something that is difficult for us to discern, though. I think when we get new construction or large additions before us, then we're asked to increase SAR and judge the project against the surrounding context, then we have real problems, and we have no guidance. But I agree with Councillor Lipoff and Laredo.
All right. Maybe I can ask that our planning department perhaps add an additional finding similar to the one we had that Councillor Lennon talked about something effectively being a de minimis. Would that be helpful, Councillor Schwartz?
Yeah, I think so. And as I said, as I opened my comments, as brief as we wanted to have a conversation, as briefly as we wanted. So, brief enough, I think.
All right. Good. We have a motion to approve. All in favor of approval? 7 in favor, none opposed. All right, thank you very much. Thank you, sir. This will get taken up next Tuesday night. No need to be here for that, okay? All right, last but not least, most certainly, is 97-16, special permit petition for 27 Waverly Avenue, Alice Schaefer, looking to create an association of persons in a common dwelling. At 27 Waverly Avenue, Ward 1. Good evening.
Good evening, Chairman, Councilors. My name is Mary Elise Comrie, and I live at 27 Waverly Avenue with the owner here, Alice Schaefer, and I'll be assisting her in the presentation this evening.
I am Alice Schaefer, the owner of this property. My husband and I bought this property in 1972 and raised our family here. And our children left. We hosted international students in this big house for a long time. But eventually, as I was aging and my children moved away, I started thinking about my own future and the future of my son who has bipolar illness. And I invited this family to come and live with me in this house. And as time went on, we got more and more interested in formally organizing ourselves as a co-op, as a kind of a opportunity to show another way of aging in place. I had been on a board of assisted living for many years, and I was one of the founding people of Newton at Home and served on their board until that organization was up and running. But for myself, I'm interested in this co-op idea.
Thank you, ma'am. Go ahead, ma'am.
Sure. I wanted to give you, before we get into the actual zoning release that we're requesting, I wanted to give you a little background on who we are and what we're hoping to accomplish with the cooperative. I think it will help inform some of the choices that we've made and how we're configuring the outside of the property. I'm here tonight, actually, with fellow members of the House, Frederick Martin, Annika Smeeding, Fred Delzell, and Jen O'Hahn and myself, and we're a group, this journey started about 2 years ago. We're a group that's lived and worked with Alice to build a model of living together that's intentional, sustainable, and affordable. We are professionals, writers, students. We have a lawyer, a chef, a solar engineer, a bookkeeper, a grandmother. And we believe that a diverse, multi-age community living together is one way to address a myriad of really challenging social issues. These include, how do you allow people to age in place? How do you provide affordable and attractive housing in Newton for various age groups and socioeconomic groups? How do you preserve these old, wonderful homes? As well as providing a living space for people with disabilities. We live with one another family style. We share common living facilities, meals, the garden, conversation, ideas, and fellowship. Our mission is to provide affordable and sustainable housing for all our members, and to that end, we share the house, its appliances and utilities, common food staples, the internet, cars, and other transportation vehicles.
We work diligently as a community to reduce our carbon footprint, and that means living without cars. many of us commute to work using the wonderful public transit system that's literally steps from our door on Tremont Street. We're basically one house in from Tremont Street on Waverly, between Tremont and Washington. We've been working with a consultant with the Cooperative Development Institute of New England to make this co-op a reality. With their help, we've put together an operating budget for the next 10 years, which takes into account how we're going to maintain and improve the property over time. We are forming a nonprofit corporate entity with the state to purchase the house from Alice. That is our idea. And now that we understand that it's economically feasible to do this, the numbers work, we would like to implement the plan. And for that reason, we now are seeking the special permit from the city.
Thank you, ma'am. Can I just get, before I'm going to hear from planning, I just want to get a little bit of clarification of what exists currently. So this is a two-family house, correct?
Correct.
A legal two-family. And how many occupants does it have?
So currently there are 10 adults living in the house. Full
10 of unassociated adults living together?
Well, my family makes up 4, and Alice's makes up 2, and then there are additional 4 unrelated.
So could I just ask our planning department, how does that square with what our zoning ordinances permit?
It's currently in compliance with zoning as a two-family.
It is in compliance?
It is in compliance, yes.
Okay. I just want to get lay of the land here. Okay.
Sure. As we run through the numbers, to make this economically feasible and why we're asking for a special permit for an association of persons of 5 or more is that we, to make the numbers work and, you know, be able to maintain the property and pay the mortgage, we would like to see or have the flexibility to have at most 16 people allowed to live in the house. Currently, we have 10 bedrooms. We'd like to see income from each one of those rooms. And some of those rooms we may need to accommodate partners. But that's not what we're doing now, you know, but...
So let me just pose another question.
Sure.
Leaving aside your absolute good intentions, and I'm acting under the assumption they are, it's clear they are, what happens 5 or 10 years from now when the membership of this association changes, if it does, and it's now a house for 16 students?
Well, the economics of the house probably foreclosed that opportunity. Students are at a price point that's a little lower than where we are for the rental units within the house. Our mission isn't necessarily, we don't necessarily want to populate the house with students. I mean, we're all, you know, we range from, I mean, we want to encourage families to live there. We don't want to encourage.
I'm not discounting your desires and legitimate goals, but, you know, having had a college-age student, I know that it's common for 7, 8, 10 students to go rent a house somewhere. And I'm frankly concerned about that possibility here, because that's a problem near some of our college campuses when that happens. And it could be seen as kind of a way of getting around some of the limitations we have in our zoning ordinance and get that result.
I apologize. I failed to mention, and Alice just reminded me, that you know, to become a member of the co-op, you need to buy into the co-op. And so that is what I meant by, in addition to the rents being higher than students are willing to pay, students are not willing to buy into that kind of structure.
Okay. Well, let me hear from planning, and then I want to hear from my colleagues. I shouldn't have taken the hog the line right there. Planning, want to take this up, please?
So this is a request for a special permit to allow an association of persons living in a common dwelling. They are seeking a waiver for up to 15 required parking stalls, because technically there would be 2 stalls required per bedroom. They are proposing to have 5 stalls on site. And they're seeking a special permit to allow the parking within 5 feet of the street. There are 3 spaces that exist now that are basically right in the front setback. So they're trying to legalize those existing stalls. The criteria to consider is that whether the site is an appropriate location for the proposed associations of persons in a common dwelling, and that the waiver for up to 15 parking stalls and parking within the front setback is appropriate for the site due to the nature of the use, the location, the size, width, depth, shape, or grade of the lot, or that the exceptions would be in the public interest.
Thank you. Before I take comments from my colleagues, is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard on this petition? Yes, come on up, please, ma'am.
Thank you. My name is Martha Hathaway. I live at 31 Waverly Avenue. I'm right next door to Mrs. Favor's house, and Sarah, I wish I'd actually measured it. It's, I don't know how many, it's over 100 feet, the fence line with them. Actually, it's quite a long lot, and these are the whole length of it. And we fully support, my family and I, their plans for their property, and just wanted to be on record as saying so.
Great. Thank you very much. Is there any other member? Yes, come on up next.
Hi, my name is Max Goldsmith at 3 Waverly Avenue. I'm 3 houses away. I've been a resident of the neighborhood for over 40 years. We've known Alice. Our children grew up together. And we fully support this program.
Thank you. Is there any other member of the public? Yes, ma'am. Come on up, please.
I'm Carol Connolly at 34 Waverly Avenue. I have a question for you, folks. I fully support.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody else who wishes to be heard? Yes, come on up, please, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Joan Delisle. I live at 295 Tremont Street. This reminds me of a middle-aged, middle-class con woman in Brookline a few years ago. I fully support the proposal. I think it'd be a terrific addition to the way Newton deals with his housing.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody else wish to be heard on the petition? I see none. Colleagues, I saw Councillor Quasley, Cody,
Lennon.
Go ahead, in that order.
Thank you. This is certainly a new idea for as long as I've sat on the council or the board of aldermen, and for as long as I can remember living in the city. And it's one of the few that sent me to the zoning ordinances to see how you work this out. I'm sure there's still a lot I need to learn about how you've constructed this, but it's clearly allowed by special permit and very creative. I'd like to understand more about how the construct works. So I figured people would have to buy in. So is it appears to me, so you've got a 2-family, and it's still going to be 2 dwellings, but one is going to be a single for the Schaefers, and the other one is going to be really what I could consider or think of as congregate living.
Correct.
And yet it's a co-op. So I'm guessing there's a buy-in, and then there's the rental is more like a condo fee, so that you continue to maintain the building and provide whatever services and transportation, I imagine, is included in that. And I think it's very interesting to think of that. I can't see how it works because there's no sort of structure presented to us. And I'm thinking that one of the challenges might be how to... So our concerns are few. Let me rephrase that. Our concerns are few with respect to the relief we're granting. But I think an understanding of how the cooperative works over time to maintain the services it needs. You mentioned that you'll be welcoming disabled folks, and you're going to share transportation. So it's a very new construct for us to be thinking about. I don't know if the law department wants to weigh in on this at all. I'm sure one of the concerns is about the number of vehicles and how you do that, how that works. Understanding that you're near public transportation, but that's the most serious waiver you're asking for is to have
fewer
vehicles on site.
The site currently has 3 parking stalls,
mm-hmm.
and those 3 stalls have adequately served the needs, the transportation needs of the current 10 adults that are living in the house. I know we all avail ourselves of the public transportation. I've commuted to downtown Boston for 19 years on the 501 Express bus. It's just steps away from our door. Other members of our house use public transportation. It's modeled on this idea that if you cap our number of stalls to 5, you know, we can't park anywhere else. I mean, in this neighborhood, parking on a street is not really a viable option. As you know, there's no overnight parking from November to April.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're close to the express bus lines, there's no parking on the streets between 7 and 9 a.m. at any day of the week, any time of the year. Also along Waverly in that area, there's only 2-hour street parking. So we'd not be shifting the burden. I mean, we couldn't accept someone who had a 6th car.
Mm-hmm.
Or they would have to find other arrangements, you know, garage their car somewhere. But that's also not consonant with our mission, which is to reduce the carbon footprint.
So if I may,
particular question.
So in terms of better understanding how the cooperative functions, what the concept looks like, have you written or drafted bylaws?
We have bylaws, and we have a board, and the house. You know, we have a house meeting every week where we address, you know, concerns that are raised. The board, we intend to extend invitations to a couple of members of the community, so they're actively involved in what's going on with the cooperative. We really see this as an opportunity to model and interact with the community,
mm-hmm.
what this kind of living could be. I know in terms of, you know, ways to think about how you could ensure that our mission stays true, so to speak, you know, there could be ways where we could check back in with you at different time intervals and to keep, you know, ensuring the community that, in fact, it's not turning into a student house. I mean, that is something that we are open to considering. And
well, I think it would be helpful, at least for me, to be able to see in writing what since you're already doing this, essentially,
mm-hmm.
What your internal rules are. So how is it that you're keeping control of the situation? Because the chairman's first question about students, I think, maybe will dissolve depending on, you know, what are the requirements for acceptance into the co-op. It's not just money. It's the fact that, I mean, if there are 10 people there and there are 5 couples. I'm just making this up. So, and there's 4 more who want access. The 10 people who are there are going to be discerning whether or not it's a good match.
That's correct.
So, and, you know, what kind of metrics are you setting up? I mean, it's both interesting to me, but also I think it might be useful for us to understand what kind of controls you're putting in place for yourself.
So why don't we do this? If you have something already in writing, if you could submit it, that'd be great. If you have some, at least, concept, that would be helpful. And I'm going to ask the law department and or the planning department if they can weigh in on what other, since I don't think we've had something like this in the city that I'm aware of, I'd like to see what other cities and towns have done to try to provide for the concerns and the needs that these petitioners are expressing,
but, you know, address the point I raised about what happens when 20 years from now they're not there anymore and we have a very different configuration. Because what we're doing here, in my mind, sets some precedent. It's not just this house, it's not just these individuals, but it's what we may do elsewhere in the city. So I, for one, would like that.
You have one more point.
One more point, and then I'm going to go to Councilor Cody.
So this is basically a group home of a certain description. We don't have this in Newton now, but it's on the docket. Brookline has a set of rules for group homes where they require, and this is another control that some communities have, and what they have seems to work pretty well, where they require annual inspections of any kind of group home. Whether it's an association of persons or whether it's housing for disabled adults or whatever. So there's an annual inspection by the Board of Health and the Inspectional Services Department to make sure fire safety, all that kind of stuff is being taken care of. And I want to put that on the table because I'm interested in seeing us have that kind of control here in Newton. We have a few SROs. We have not permitted any SROs for as long as I can remember, but the point has come up. I don't know if you wanted to comment on that. I think we're open and amenable, and we understand that we're kind of charting the course here, and so we are very flexible and open to working with the city to make this work. I mean, I think we see this as a housing configuration that benefits both us as residents and you, the city. I guess with regard to the concern about precedent setting, I mean, that's kind of the wonderful thing about the special permit process. It's really a case-by-case consideration, and so it's whether it's really appropriate for this particular neighborhood. And I think given where this house is located, so close to transit, and in an MR1 district, right next to an MR2 district on Tremont Street, and up the road, we've got the beginning of a single-family district. I think it's nicely situated to and won't overburden that neighborhood.
Councilor Curry, but just a question for the planning department. The petitioners, as I understand, are proposing to change the configuration of the two families so that only one unit is going to be one family and all the other bedrooms are two. Is there any issue with that at all? I mean, it seems to me it's rather different than your typical two family.
Right.
And they're changing the configuration of that. Does that have any effect on what we're doing?
Not in zoning sense. It'll still remain a two-unit house with, I think the co-op owns the entire configuration. It's just how they chose to configure it. But
and from the law department, are there any concerns there?
I'd echo what Alexandra is saying in terms of the zoning point of view. I think we do need to want, I think you're going to want to look at it and see, are both dwelling units going to be owned by the co-op? So you'd want to look at those sorts of operational details to see how it's going to shake out. But from the fact that it's a multi-residence district and it's still two dwelling districts configured differently, I don't see that as a problem unless it runs into some kind of a definitional issue for the two families.
I guess I'm concerned about how we're going to have essentially a cooperative living situation with two distinct units that are separate.
They're not necessarily antagonistic to each other. Again, it could be similar to a condominium format in which you've got separate dwelling units, but you've got an overall arching association.
But it's not a condominium.
I understand that. That's why I think one.
I think there's a lot of legalities here that I think we owe it to ourselves to have a little bit better understanding. Do you have counsel helping you with this?
I'm actually a real estate lawyer in Boston.
Okay, good.
So
that's helpful.
So I've been counseling the co-op. I mean, we've been sort of refraining from hiring local counsel here.
No, I'm not suggesting you. I'm just trying to understand legally. You're changing the configuration of the two families.
It's the use. I mean, the physical configuration. You know, we've got the one unit is basically a garden apartment in the back with one bedroom, and the cooperative incorporation will own the entire house, and we will be leasing the different rooms within the house, including the apartment down below. And so those controls are easily written into, you know, into the lease. I mean, they're written into our bylaws, but it's also written into our leases as to who has control over what goes on, you know, in the property.
I think one of the suggestions from Councilor Crosley is if you can provide some of that information to our planning department, that'd be very helpful. Councilor Cody?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I do have a lot of questions here. And one of the comments that was made was that because this is a special permit, a case-by-case basis, that would actually be one of the bigger problems I would have with that. So I just want to share with planning everything else, because that would be a situation now we're starting to pit neighborhood against neighborhood, and I think that would be a problem going forward. So I think we would have to address it more in a zoning situation where we would find appropriate locations for this type of established housing rather than saying case by case, because I can just envision there's some neighborhoods that would absolutely not allow this, despite the fact that someone might be generous enough to donate their house or turn it into a co-op, but we may find a lot of pushback from the neighborhood to be putting something in. So that's just one comment there. But so my first question is, why are we here today? Was there a reason why this was brought in, or did you just propose this to bring, like, did ISD get involved at some point?
No. We are going out to get, you know, a mortgage. And so we need to, in order, we have to show them, you know, what our budgets are and what feasibility is. And mm-hmm. we may need to have more than 10 people in the house. And so, in order to make those numbers work, and that's why we're coming to the city now to get the special permit approval.
Okay. So these are issues that we have to address, because I'm looking at the assessed value and the value of the property and the Zillow ratings and everything else, and I don't see that having 10 or 20 people in there would at all preclude a student from renting, because they would clearly benefit by any kind of proposed rent that would be in a situation at that size. So I don't. How would you limit, like, because that would be my concern. I've lived in college areas before where those neighborhoods become pretty crazy after a while and you start putting 10 or 20 kids into a house. And I understand that the initial intent is not for that to happen. But as you move down through time, things change. So I don't know from the legal perspective, Mr. Chair, or law, if we can limit the special permit to say that once this use changes, or...
I think what one of the things I'd ask the law department to look into is what limitations could be put into a special permit that would preclude that type of problem, consistent with not discriminating against anybody, of course.
I'm still going.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So the other concern I have now is I know that we're looking at it as two units, if there are two equal size units, and you put 5 to 10 people in each one, a family could be that size, and they always have done in the past. However, are these doors individually locked? Like, are the rooms locked and secured? Is that proposed, that they would be, like, deadbolt locked?
So, yeah, I mean, all the doors do have locks on them, but by and large, they're open.
So my other concern...
I'm not sure what you're driving at.
So have you approached the fire department to find a question about this, or...
Yes, they stamped they did a plan review and stamped it.
And they're okay with the...
And they actually, when they went through, they wanted us to remove the locks, and so that's why we don't lock the doors in the house.
So I don't know how we prevent that from the future. So if the fire department doesn't want locks and then they become locked, so that's the concern I have with this whole project, is like, you know, how do you limit it to be what... You're designing a nice project from the face of it, but there's a lot of other little things that we have to...
Legal department that maybe you incorporate
manual
inspection, you know, some kind of requirement like that.
No sprinklers, though? I mean, it seems like they require sprinklers now at certain sites.
No.
Is there a sprinkler requirement with this many people? And, I mean, we're talking 18, potentially 16 or 18 people at a house.
There isn't. Presumably a family with 18 children could live in a house and use every room as a bedroom. I did check with IFC.
Yeah, but this is not a family of 18 right. children. Right. This is an association of individuals that's coming in for a special permit.
I did have the plans reviewed by the building department, and they are fine, and the fire department looked at it as well. Sprinklers are not necessary as long as the rooms are not locked.
Okay.
So I guess my last thing, just to finish off the fire department piece, is the reason I'd be concerned with that is if that's my family and it's my 10 kids running around there, I can control what they have in their room, and as far as lighting, hot plates, microwave ovens, stoves, that type of thing. But if you have individual tenants inside a room, that's why I'd be concerned about the fire code at that point, because you may have hot plates, you could have a heater, individual heater in there.
The idea and the concept is really to live cooperatively, and mm-hmm. one of the tenets of that is that, we have rules and regulations that people in the house will have to abide by, and that's why we have the weekly meeting so that we can discuss issues as they come up. And I think we're pretty well aware of what our requirements and duties are to the city, and so, if we have provisions that if people don't abide by those rules and regulations, their interest in the house can be terminated.
Okay, so my last question then for legal also. So we have the bylaws, we look at the bylaws, and we say, okay, these look pretty good, and we'll go along with this, but now the bylaws change and we don't know about this. How do we, the annual inspection could be fine for fire code and safety codes and everything else, but how do we know if the bylaws change and we don't have an idea what's happened? That would be a concern. Do we need approval to change the bylaws?
Well, I think that's something we can ask our legal and planning department to weigh on. We are in, I think it's fair to say, somewhat uncharted waters of the committee, which is why you're getting a lot of questions here. All right. Councillor Oshinkle. And then Councillor Leonard.
Well, first of all, I think this is a exciting and forward-looking idea. I'm excited to be here and talking about this. Two prosaic questions. One, just to understand the situation with the vehicles, there'd be five cars, and the cars would be owned by individuals who are in the co-op, or would they be owned by the co-op itself?
Presently, they're owned by individuals in the house, and we, loan them between, different people in the house as needed. We hadn't made plans for having the co-op own cars just because our current system seems to be working rather well. So.
Okay, so there's one owner of the car and everyone's got them their insurance and it kind of just works organically in there. And then if a person wanted to come and they had a vehicle themselves that made it vehicles equal six, that person would not be allowed to come because there'd be no parking for that car?
That's correct. Okay. Or they'd have to find other arrangements for the car, whether it's finding a garage somewhere where they could drive it.
Got it. Just trying to make sure that it's not going to be out in the street. And the second one is more for the planning and legal. Would you mind explaining how it is that they're already in compliance if they've got what seems to me like way more than two families living there?
So one unit has a family of four in it, compliant. The other unit has a family with two people, and they have four lodgers, compliant.
Four lodgers plus two people?
Yes.
That's five.
Six.
Right, but I thought...
Each unit is allowed, people are allowed to have up to four lodgers in the house, in a unit.
Councilor Clarkley.
I can see how that can work, but I think we better get the math right. So in the second unit where you've got two members who are a family, and then we don't have four additional unrelated people. We might have four additional people, but two of them must be related at least. Because I think the association of persons, I really did
the
homework on this one, I thought.
They're not equal units in size. So the smaller unit is inhabited by two, and the larger unit is inhabited by a family of four plus four lodgers. But of the four...
And
so
there's no requirements in our statute that you can have four lodgers in addition to your family, and there's no limitation in our statute whatsoever?
I believe four is the limit.
four is the limit, but if there's four, if two of them are married or related in some way, then it's only three.
Right, this is different. Five.
Well, I don't know who it is. So it's four. My husband and I and our two daughters, and then four unrelated.
Okay. I must say I'm a little bit perplexed because I thought we had one of the relief here is we have an association of more than how many people?
So that is the relief that they're seeking so that they can have additional people live there. They couldn't have more now than they currently have. So they're seeking this association so they can increase the number of people in the second larger unit if they so choose. They're currently capped by the limit of the number of
So they can, they could conceivably, if they had two husband and wife or two spouses, could have four different families occupying the unit?
I think a lodger is a lodger. I don't know if
I right. I don't know that you say family units constitute a single lodger. I have not done that particular calculation, but Alan Fender is right that typically the number of people who constitute a family are not considered when you look at how many lodgers each family or dwelling unit may have in addition to their family members. But I have not gotten into a consideration of whether families constitute one lodger, and I suggest that they don't.
Okay. Well, I think we're trying to go prospective, not retrospective, so I'll hold that for the moment. Councilor Lennon?
So, Mr. Chairman, it's clear that, you know, with the amount of questions, and I don't think we're going to act on this tonight.
It's not my intent to vote this. I want to just flesh out the questions as much as we can. These are uncharted waters for us, and you can see why you're getting so many questions. So go ahead.
So that was exactly my point, is to hopefully get all of this clarified, because it is a little bit, it's new to us. In fact, when Alice had called me, I had mentioned to her I needed to kind of review the zoning ordinance before we got together. However, I think they're all fair questions, but I think if we flush it out, we should be able to get it all worked out. I had an opportunity to visit the site and sit with Alice and some other the petitioners, and it was actually pretty energizing. It was actually a pretty interesting meeting, and you can feel a lot of sense of how it worked in the actual house. A couple of questions that might help that we put out there. So the co-op is buying the property. Does the co-op act as almost like a deed? Would it go with the property in perpetuity?
Well, the co-op would be the entity that owns the property.
Right.
So their name is on the deed.
Right. So I guess what
so
I'm getting...
So fully transfer the co-op, it's just, concept, failed and broke down. We couldn't meet the conditions, then we'd have to sell the house.
But I guess what I'm trying to get at is to help the committee maybe see that co-op agreement and understand everything that's in it. It might help to alleviate some of the questions that we're kicking around, and if it is more of an agreement that almost acts as, like what we do is we establish special permit conditions, if that almost acts as like your guiding conditions, we may be able to address some things mutually in terms of like future parking and things like that the chairman was relating to. I just think it will be helpful for the committee to kind of dive into it a little bit and have some dialogue with you guys about it. I'm not so much concerned about if it is that agreement sort of guides that thought. I'm not so much concerned about, the potential to have 16 one bedrooms with 16 different people renting them out. My only experience with that is usually it's been one landlord who does that, who's not in compliance with anything we're trying to do here in the city. I give these people a lot of credit for realizing that they have an opportunity under our existing ordinances to kind of to put something like this together, and we're really thinking outside the box. I think it's great. I think what we've experienced in the past with, you know, maybe some of the college areas and things like that is runs in contrast to what these folks are trying to do. So, again, that's only been my own experience. I'm not speaking for other members here. I think that it's a fair question to ask about, you know, some sort of fire suppression system. However, they did have the fire department look at it, and I don't exactly know what triggers a suppression system. I thought that, well, it might be helpful to get it just so that the committee understands. I thought it was based on the number of units. Again, here, we technically only have 2 units, right? So that could be the reason why. If it's properly, has all the CO, smoke alarms, all that kind of stuff has been stamped, I'm not ready to run contrary to what the fire department's going to tell me. But it's fair for the committee to have that info if hopefully we're going to get like things like this in the future that we can chew on. We will have that. Unfortunately, you're going to be the test case. So the last piece that I wanted to say was I'm glad to see that it's being done by special permit, kind of in contrast to what Councilor Cody's saying, because this type of scenario might not work as well in another part of the city or even another part of this neighborhood. It's great that they're so close to public transportation. They have the ability to literally hop, skip, and jump right over to it. It may not work as well in other wards, which is great that it's by special permit that we can come and talk about some of those things. So I think the last part I might have said is another any more parking on the site is just not practical here. I mean, there's no access to the back. They're utilizing all the access that they can in the front, and I thought that Councilor Austin-Cross put up a good point where, you know, maybe it's something that you think about in the future that even if it were, you know, someone moves out, someone else moves in that, you know, both had cars, that there could be some, like, ride-sharing possibilities there with vehicles, and that could be written within the agreement. So I think it's I'm glad that they've moved forward with this. Again, I was there. I was able to see how it worked. But I think it's fair that the committee has a number of questions that we can work on together and get them all answered. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Leonard. Can I just pick up for the planning department and or legal? I appreciate what Councilor Leonard said about the fire suppression systems. Could you compare and contrast that with what would be required if this was some kind of SRO? What the requirements for fire suppression systems would be in that case. That would be very helpful. Councilor Schwartz, did you want to say something?
So I would echo the comments of my colleagues who have spoken about your forthrightness in coming forward and trying to put something together like this, as well as your creativity. I think that the ability to kind of address the challenges that our aging population has is really remarkable, and I salute you for your work on Newton at Home. That's a terrific organization that you've helped put together. So I guess when I'm reading this, I'm just looking at the ordinance as much as I can, and I'm not a practicing lawyer. So what I keep coming back to is the congregate living facility definition. Is this not relevant? Why not? And I'm sorry if I'm being dense, but it sounds like a congregate living arrangement.
If you look at the definition of a congregate living facility, it's for ones, for individuals who require more assisted care.
Yes.
This is coming as I understand it, as an association of persons where it's got a different organization. There may be individuals within that who are helped by living in a group home arrangement, but it's not a congregate, it's not within the definition of a congregate living facility per our zoning ordinance. I don't know why the zoning memo that Jane wrote referenced the congregate living facility as well as the association of persons, because it looks to me as though it's only an association of persons.
What makes the difference? Is it what they ask for, or is it what it is?
No, it's not just what they ask for. It's also what they're doing. And again, I go back to the congregate living facility definition, which appears.
Yeah, I've been looking at it. It's on page 378.
Section 30-1. An association of persons living together in a shared living environment which integrates shelter and service needs of elderly, functionally impaired, and or functionally isolated persons who are otherwise in good health and can maintain a semi-independent lifestyle. So this is not that?
That's not what I'm hearing it described as.
And what would determine that? What they say it is? I mean, because...
It may well be, if this is going to be a nonprofit, you often look to the Articles of Organization for the nonprofit to find out what the nonprofit purpose is. And you may very well have, as we have right now in the several group homes in the city, where there is a discussion that they're serving a particular class of individuals, and that may be where you see the expression in the nonprofit Articles of Organization that are consistent with what our definition of a congregate living facility is. There also is a congregate living facility, I believe, at one point down on Newtonville Avenue in what's now the Juniper House. But at one point it was a congregate living facility, and I think the definition in our zoning ordinance actually went in during that time frame when that particular organization was attempting to put together one of the first cooperative living facilities in the city for elderly individuals who were in this category.
Yeah, I mean, our focus is on families and, accommodating, people who are, as they get older in the house. Our mission is not to provide services for people who are either physically, mentally, or somehow impaired.
Although
that require, the congregate living contemplates a more... significant...
More robust service, yes.
Exactly.
Although it does include elderly, which I took to mean in your presentation that was a big part of the purpose here.
Well, the big part...
Everybody is.
No, I know, but...
Yeah, I think that's the difference.
Right, well, I guess my point was that as I look at the two different definitions, the association of persons lacks some of what you're saying. At least how you're presenting it to us as being a creative way of addressing kind of aging in place, because it doesn't specify that there's a component of that, whereas congregate living seems to go further than what you're proposing because it's all the service and functional impairment. So I'm just trying to find a way to structure this to reflect what your goal is, and perhaps Councillor Lennon has come up with a different way of doing that, which is to focus on your cooperative agreement and make that some kind of basis for the limits on what type of arrangement you have. But I think at least how you presented it, we're not looking at this as completely an association of persons. We're not saying that without any component of kind of helping an elderly person stay in the community, we're just going to... I mean, maybe you are asking for that. I don't know, but the way you presented it...
I don't ask for what's existing in the code. So, you're right. Your association of a person's definition and code provision doesn't have control. It's just a number issue,
right.
Really. And so your other, fire regulations, ISC regulations, building regulations are one way to control it. And as Councillor Lennon said, there can be internal controls within, that we as a co-op can impose. And it sounds like you as a board are seeking yet additional ways to control it. And so that's part of this dialogue, is try to, how do we marry that up and get to a place where you're comfortable?
I guess my question for you is, how central to your cooperative agreement and your plans is your commitment to, or your statement that you're interested in providing a model for aging in place? Is that just what it is now, and it's not necessarily going to be part of your cooperative agreement going forward, or is that going to be a component of that
It's a piece of our mission. It's not our whole mission.
But it's part of it.
It is definitely part of it.
So that'll be reflected in your cooperative agreement? That's
correct.
And how much of...
We have gone through and said we are going to designate X percentage of living space to elderly living and
Exmod. I mean, it really...
You are going to do that?
We are not. We have not planned on doing that.
Are you going to say at least some of it has to be elderly?
Yes. I mean, we have one whole unit, you know, the second smaller unit at this point being used for Alice.
So I understand it's being used now, but will that be part of the... Cause, and I don't want to belabor the point, but if we're making a decision based on the concept being a way of addressing aging in our community and you know, making sure that that is achievable, then I think that needs to be part of your statement of purpose or cooperative agreement. That's how I would support it. If it's simply for an association of persons, I'd need to do a little bit more.
I think this is an association of persons. It just so happens that this particular petitioner is looking to try to accommodate their needs, very fair, very legitimate needs. You're saying you want some restriction potentially in there that
I just want to clarify. If we're going to make the decision based on what it is in this particular case, we have to be mindful that it could change and not be how it is planned currently.
And that's one of my concerns, is that no matter what the bona fides of all of these particular petitioners, and there's no question, in my mind, there's absolutely no question of that. That's not my concern. My concern is what happens 5, 10, 15 years from now.
My other point would be that I know you're asking for relief on the parking requirement, and I would just put out there that by approving a 15 parking stall relief waiver, we're really allowing up to 20 persons. But if we don't provide a 15, if we say, let's say, 5 waivers, then that will effectively limit the chance that you would have that many more cars, because you just wouldn't be able to put them on the site. So
And it also burdens the neighborhood, which is something we're also trying not to do.
If you end up having 20 people in the house, that's burdening the neighborhood. I can't tell you how many situations we have where people rent and then say, gosh, I don't know where to put my car, but they have the car. And so if we don't provide for some kind of parking, then we really shouldn't have that many people.
All I can say is that for us, it pretty much effectively defeats one of our fundamental purposes of the co-op.
You really see 20 people in there, not 10 as you currently have?
No, I think at most that we would only probably want, I think we need the flexibility to have at most 14 to 16 people. I don't think they just put 20 in the memo, because if you look at 10 bedrooms and a couple can go in each bedroom, you know, that gets you to 20. But, you know, in terms of actual, comfortableness of actually living in the house and what's economically feasible, we've modeled anywhere from 14 to 16.
Folks, we're certainly going to hold this item this evening. What I'm going to just ask is if anybody has particular questions for the petitioner, questions for the planning department, questions for the legal department, questions... And one of my questions, just so you know, is what do we do when the next property that comes to us is next to Boston College or next to LaSalle or one of our other institutions of higher education, and they're seeking something similar? And how do we differentiate that, and how do we ensure that over a 5, 10, or 15-year period, it turns not into a group home for these folks, but into a place where a bunch of college students or graduate students buy in over time and now have a cooperative living situation in a neighborhood with maybe one or two family homes where there are now 16 or 18 or 20 individuals living there. And I'm looking for some guidance here. And it won't be just my questions here, but I anticipate when this comes to the full board, if it does, we're going to get those types of questions, and I'd rather be able to have them answered here than have to get to the full board and have to say we didn't discuss it. Councilor Carter.
Yes, I just want to ask one thing, Mr. Chair, that the planning department get with ISD and the zoning ordinance and get them together to get the actual information, because the ISD site says completely different stuff, or somewhat different than the zoning ordinance.
In what?
In the number of people, the number of associated folks within the same house, and then the number of people you boarded. They have three, they're talking four. So ISD has different information on their
is
site.
Is ISD saying three?
I do want to correct that, because I went back in the zoning ordinance, and it's not four border lodgers, it's three lodgers. So I
so what's this,
that.
So how is this current situation permissible?
I don't know how to, again, I want to look and be sure that we have the right number of facts. But
okay, because I think I heard the petitioner say there's a family of four, and there's four additional lodgers.
We'll look into that.
Okay. I think we need some clarification on that. Okay. Questions? Councilor Schwartz?
Sorry, I just had another point that I wasn't able to get to.
I apologize.
So it has been offered, and I think somebody else has also already said that that would be good by the petitioner, that there would be some kind of regular, whether it's yearly or two-yearly review of what's really going on in the house and is it meeting the code. I know that ISD has that job, but they are complaint-driven, and it often, as we know, does not always happen. So if we, I think that if we move forward with this with conditions, that would be one of the conditions that I would support.
Okay. And maybe if the legal and planning department can weigh in on that and what other communities have done in similar situations, that would be helpful. Anything else from my colleagues? Thank you for your patience and for educating us. We will try to take this up. My plan is take this up on the 26th. Is that enough time for you to get answers? Okay. We're going to try to come back 2 weeks from tonight. I'm hopeful we can take a vote on that time. I can't promise it. There's just a lot of questions here. I think it's going to depend on what information you're going to be able to provide to the planning and legal department, how quickly they're able to turn it around for us. They have some other petitions as well. But we'll be back here on the 26th. I'm going to need a motion to hold. Can I get a motion to hold? Councilor Auchincloss, motion to hold. Hold. 7 in favor, none opposed. It's held. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you both very much.
Thank you very much.
Different. Different isn't that a good